This program is sponsored by Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Located on 185 Worcester Street, right on Route 9, they can be reached at 508-545-8105 or at wickedchronicvendorcommons.com. Wicked Chronic is a boutique-style retail shop that focuses on selling counterculture products such as Wiccan. Cannabis culture is coming together in a unique setting. You need something for that special spell? Go on down to Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts and speak to Beverly. Tell them Dr. Chris sent you. Check them out today. You're listening to the Dead TV Podcast, podcast dedicated to all the canceled television series and sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and cartoon genre. I'm your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And the music you were listening to actually is from a YouTube video created by Gareth Wood, an 80s-style intro for the Star Wars television series The Mandalorian. And I thought the music actually fit appropriately to Dante and Randall, as each episode we're going to be discussing has to do with Dante and Randall having to rely on the other person to get them out of the trouble they're in, whether it's a courtroom battle or a Temple of Doom-style slavery.
Oh, man, yeah. These episodes are definitely, like, the second one is very Dante-focused. The first one is kind of Randall is pushing heavily. I mean, we'll get into it, but, yeah.
The first episode deals mainly, I think, with Dante. The second episode is definitely split down the middle between Dante and Randall because it's as much Dante's story as it is Randall's. Bad News Bears meets the Temple of Doom.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
But we'll get to the second episode. The first episode, Mr. Seneca has the plot synopsis for us.
Okay. The episode is called A Dissertation on the American Justice System by People Who Have Never Been Inside a Courtroom, Let Alone Know Anything About the Law, but Have Seen Way Too Many Legal Thrillers. Originally aired May 31st, 2000. Randall is left in charge of the Quick Stop as part of a bet between him and Dante. Jay sues the Quick Stop for $10 million after slipping on Randall's spilled soda. Randall is Dante's lawyer for the case while Judge Reinhold presides, and several NBA All-Stars are members of the jury. Randall ends up doing more harm than good, putting Dante at the mercy of the courtroom. Before the verdict of the case can be announced, a disclaimer informs the audience that the script for the conclusion of the episode was lost, and the remainder of the episode will be told through Korean animation. It sounds as ridiculous as it is.
So, right off the bat, we have Randall using the video store as a club, and you can't just rent any video. You have to be selected. So,
yeah.
Dante and Randall decide to switch jobs, and Dante will run the video store, and Randall will run the Quick Stop, which he doesn't get to accomplish for more than about a minute before he's absolutely terrified and loading a shotgun. This happened in the movie, too, by the way. If you remember, Dante ran the Quick Stop, the video store, Randall ran the Quick Stop, and he let a girl buy a pack of cigarettes and smoke one.
Yes, and then Dante got the backlash of that when the tobacco enforcement, I suppose, came in and ticketed the Quick Stop for selling minor cigarettes.
Which you would still get, but you would also get arrested.
That's true.
But Dante didn't care because he had a date with Caitlin Bree, who had just, I think, was about to or going to accidentally fuck a dead Jewish guy in the bathroom who thought it was Dante. This can only happen in a Kevin Smith movie named Clerks, by the way. I'm not making this up. If you've never seen Clerks, this fucking happens in the movie, and this movie is regarded as one of the best indie films of all time. I'm just putting that out there. I didn't write the movie. I'm just reporting on what happens. Moving on.
So I have to set the stage here because this episode was actually the first one aired. So all the ones that we've talked about previously, like those were not aired, and this one was the actual one shown to the first audience. And critics did not like it, but the internet critics, you know, the fans of Kevin Smith and whatnot, they fairly liked it, but of course it didn't translate into ratings.
Yeah, no. So Jay slips, Dante swears in, Randall swears in Dante, and Dante swears in Randall, Lord Ambassador of the Quick Stop, which is supposed to mean, like, nothing whatsoever, until then Jay comes in and sues them for $10 million because of Randall's negligence, and the judge happens to be Judge Reinhold, who's actually voiced by actor Judge Reinhold, who the last time I believe we saw him was Santa Claus 3, I think. I swear I've not seen Judge Reinhold in anything since Santa Claus 3. Have you ever seen...
Oh, yeah, he was in those movies.
Yeah, he was the obnoxious... okay, for some reason, I don't know what it is going on right now, but I can't do any... I don't have a search bar on IMDb. Oh, hold on. Okay, now I got it. All right, hold on. I'm going to look up Judge Reinhold and edit this part out. But, yeah, he was originally, in the first movie, don't forget, he was kind of... I wouldn't say the bad guy, but he was the anti-Tim Allen's character in that movie.
Yeah, because he didn't really believe the stories about Santa, because he was disillusioned himself as a child.
But he has been doing nothing but just garbage made for TV movies or episodes of animation here and there. Like, he was the voice of Negative Man on Teen Titans, a character I barely even know about, and I'm a Teen Titans fan. But his most recent film was 2 years ago, if you can believe this. And he's been doing conventions since, so I think he's now hitting the convention circuit making money. But his last movie was Four Christmases and a Wedding, one of those Hallmark Channel Lifetime made-for-TV movies.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, his best probably known role is masturbating to Phoebe Cates in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Doesn't anyone knock anymore? And, of course, playing Detective Billy Rosewood in the Beverly Hills Cop trilogy. Could he be coming back for the upcoming Beverly Hills Cop 4 that's going right to Netflix? Maybe.
Well, you know, they reference that in this episode, too. You know, there's a special appearance by Axel Foley, which is actually a dream sequence that Judge Reinhold is having. This episode has a bit where everyone has dream sequences about this courthouse case.
Right, and he was like, oh, I was in Gremlins, but you weren't in Gremlins too. And by the way, I'd like to point out to the court that the judge has never been in a George Lucas movie. I'll accept it. I want my $8 back for episode one, Mr. Spiel. So they call George Lucas, Joel Schumacher dressed in a Batman costume, and calls Batman and Robin the gayest movie of all time, which was the longest-running joke until we're not allowed to make that joke anymore. But in Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, do you remember what was said about Batman and Robin the movie?
Oh, a lot was said about that movie. It's a colorful nightmare. I don't remember the actual quote, though.
Okay, so in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, at the very end of the movie, I believe it's either the lesbian from Chasing Amy or... Banky, the co-creator of Bluntman and Chronic, says that was the gayest movie since Batman and Robin. That's what he calls Bluntman and Chronic the movie.
Yeah.
He also calls to the stand Spike Lee. I don't know what movie he'd be calling Spike Lee for because they don't mention it. Woody Allen, and he says Hook was an absolute travesty.
I liked Hook.
I like Hook too, Mr. Seneca, but I mean, Hook does not hold up as well as it did when I was a child.
I'll have to rewatch it because it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I could be seeing it through the nostalgia glasses of, you know, time.
What does hold up for me is the fact that Julia Roberts was fantastic as Tinkerbell.
That she was.
It is very funny. She went from a hooker with a heart of gold to playing Tinkerbell.
Yeah. A few more roles between that, but yeah, sure.
The entire jury is made up of the starting lineup, but they can't go to the All-Star game, and they're being substituted by the MWBA, which is the Women's National Basketball Association, which the last time I had a conversation with somebody about the Women's National Basketball Association, this person couldn't name me one athlete from the Women's National Basketball Association. they are relegated to roles in movies sometimes, like direct-to-video schlock about dogs and chimps that do basketball stunts. Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I watched this episode with my son, and even he did not like this episode. You know, 12, Yoni. He did not like this episode.
Did you have to explain to him that gay jokes in 2000 are not funny?
I actually had to explain a different joke. It's the one right around this time where he's saying that the entire jury is black, and so they go to Lando, which was introduced as the black character in a previous episode, in order to get, like, you know, how they should talk to the jury. And that, I thought, was just, you could have just said they're basketball players.
Right.
Now, you know, them being athletes is just, you know, one bucket they could be put in, not just because they're black people. And then Randall goes hardcore into the stereotypes by saying grape soda, food stamps, welfare. It's so insulting.
Right. Also, who was the voice of George Lucas?
Was it George Lucas? I didn't see him on the credits.
The Dr. Chris Radio Horror Program. And tonight on Radio Horror, we have one of the most well-known animator storytellers in the many, many years of animation from the 80s, 90s, and today, who's worked on in comics as well. We have the great Paul Dini on the show with us. Thank you for coming on the show with us, Paul.
Happy to be here, Chris.
One thing I would love to touch upon right in the beginning. Paul Dini, best known for being the writer on Tiny Toon Adventures, Batman the Animated Series, Justice League the Animated Series, countless DC comics, and the creator of Harley Quinn.
Wow. Awesome. That's a pretty big gift.
It was. I had this happen in February of 2017. The reason why he came on the show is because I had his wife on my show several months prior to this, and I established an amazing rapport with her, and she offered me her husband.
Wow. In my world, that means something completely different.
Okay, you take that any way you want, but she might be into that. She's into straitjackets, so I don't know, but I'm not going to speculate on that because I like her. But yeah, she. I had been a big admirer of her. I've been a big admirer of his for a long time, but I was a big admirer of hers, and I was able to reach out to her. And then I never brought it up, but I brought up like about an abuse thing that was going on with a charity, an abuse charity that she was helping. And she did a video where she gets out of a straitjacket. And the straitjacket was supposed to be an abusive relationship because she talks about in the interview about how her mother was in an abusive relationship with her father. And the subject of her husband, Paul Dini, came up because her husband had recently been on Kevin Smith's podcast. Ha-ha, bringing it back to Kevin, when he was doing Fat Man on Batman, back when he actually had Batman guests on his podcast. Paul Dini came on his podcast to discuss a graphic novel that he was printing called Batman The Darkest Night, about an incident on the way home from the, not the Academy Awards, but the Emmys, for winning an Emmy for writing for Tiny Toon Adventures. He was beaten with an inch of his life and mugged. And part of his skull was fractured, his jaw was messed up, and he never told anyone this story with the exception of very close friends, including Harlene Sorkin, who was the voice of Harley Quinn at the time, until many years later, and he told the truth in public on Kevin's podcast.
Whoa, that's intense.
Yep. And the subject of that came up on my show with his wife, Misty Lee, who is a Vegas-style stage magician. Basically looks like Zatanna. If you know what Zatanna looks like, you know what Misty Lee looks like. The fun little joke is always that Paul Dini loved Zatanna so much that one day he married a real-life Zatanna. Because everyone knows Zatanna is a big favorite character of Paul Dini's. He wrote Zatanna comic books and, of course, wrote her on the Batman show that he was writer of. Anyway, so she offered up to allow me to interview her husband, and then later on she told me that a lot of people ask me to interview Paul, and I turned them down, but I enjoyed coming on your show so much, I wanted you to have a chance to talk to him.
Aw, that's so sweet!
Yep, so, and he was, if you listen to the interview, it's on my YouTube channel, Dr. Chris's Radio of Horror, just Radio Horror, look, type in Radio Horror Paul Dini. It's one of the nicest people I've ever had a chance to interview in my life. He speaks so nicely and has such kindness in his voice. It was an absolute pleasure. And he was more than happy to talk about The Darkest Night, which I did read and is a very difficult book to get through. But he was a lot of fun to talk to about you know, the creation of Harley Quinn and everything else he's working on. At the time he came on, he was working on Justice League Action, which is a now-canceled Cartoon Network mini Justice League cartoon series.
That's very cool.
Yep. So, but yeah, he was the voice of George Lucas in this episode.
Nice. We have also Phil LaMarr again, who plays the Axel Foley character in Judge Reinhold's dream slash nightmare, because they didn't have any more bananas for the tailpipes. So Phil LaMarr, great actor. We've talked about him in the past.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Well, that's pretty much all the notes I have for this episode, but you listened to the commentary a little bit, right?
Yes. So, you know, all of the animation was done in Korea. So they had several different teams of animators in Korea that really animated these characters. So when the end of the courtroom scene comes up and it is now supposedly the Korean animators, it's always been the Korean animators, and the imagery that comes up is basically what they designed. There's a few more things that they didn't actually add, but some jokes were added in there, such as the Transformer changing from the truck into the you know, body form, and then the passenger inside ends up being a pool of blood on the ground. They got by a lot of censors with that type of thing. And apparently, according to Kevin Smith on the commentary, that the quote, "Oh my God, Bear is driving," from that section of the episode,
uh-huh,
took off virally. So
yeah,
that, "Oh my God, Bear is driving," is like a very quotable thing from this episode.
Yes, definitely. Well, we're going to jump, take a quick break, and come back for the second episode, which is a combination of three amazing movies from the 80s. We'll be right back.
Coming soon from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Working together, we saved the planet. And I believe that if we stayed together as a team, we would be a force that could truly work for the ideals of peace and justice.
Every episode.
My name is Jean. I'm a Martian.
Every adventure.
Okay, you guys are so slow.
Every hero.
Whatever you think you're doing, if you present a threat to the world, the Justice League will take you down.
Cindy and Chris Franklin bring you JLU Cast.
Whatever the future holds, we'll make those choices ourselves.
Don't say you don't love me.
I'll never say that.
Covering the complete animated run of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
And the adventure continues.
Their strength in numbers.
What? Like a bunch of super friends? More like a Justice League.
And we're back. with the Dead TV Podcast with the second episode of our coverage. And the music in the background you're listening to is composed by the great John Williams with an orchestra and vocals and a whole bunch of other stuff too. But you also heard the music from The Last Starfighter and Carmen number one prelude, which is used for the theme for the Bad News Bears. And we'll explain why soon. Mr. Zendikar has the episode synopsis for us.
Okay. The episode is entitled Dante and Randall and Jay and Silent Bob and a bunch of new characters and Lando take part in a whole bunch of movie parodies. I don't believe this one was ever aired. Dante and Randall attend their high school reunion where Randall discovers he has the ability to turn women into lesbians. And Dante...
Okay, go on.
I know. And Dante is accosted by his old baseball team because they don't remember him, although Dante was the coach that won them the championship game. Leonardo decides to let Dante manage his Little League team. The team is on a losing streak until the inclusion of Jay and Silent Bob, as Jay is still in the fourth grade for being held back so many times, and is technically eligible to play. Meanwhile, Randall is put into slave labor after beating the high score in an old video game. Dante and the baseball team discover Randall while searching for a baseball team that they have been scheduled to play, which turn out to be some of the children enslaved to work in the mines.
Big Lord in the pit, my heart's being ripped out. Which is basically what happens during that scene or whatever. That guy is just being lowered in. And man, watching that movie today as an adult, I get why some things in that movie are offensive. But I also get that movie being like the darkest of the Indiana Jones movies. And this is after India has fought Nazis, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Thuggies were nothing.
Oh my God, that is a seriously dark movie when you think about it today. But I still love it. I know Short Round is annoying. I know Willie's annoying. I know a lot of people don't like those characters in that movie. They don't like the Asians.
I like Short Round.
I think Short Round's okay. I understand the okay, so is it the gang at the beginning of the movie that's trying to kill Indy, or is it Short Round that people find offensive in Chinese culture?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know the specific qualms with that.
Okay. I mean, Short Round's accent I don't think is annoying. I think he just has an accent. Indy adopts this young Chinese boy after his parents are killed. How legal? I don't know, and I don't care. The point is, whatever happens in the Short Round, I think is explored later on in other medias or whatever. I mean, the actor who plays Short Round appears at conventions once in a while, and he's always happy to talk to fans. And you know, he did have to create the accent because he spoke complete English. So
yeah, I've always loved Short Round. I thought as a kid watching this that he was, you know, the bright star in it.
Now, the thing is with Willie, though, is I believe Steven Spielberg and George Lucas were both going through, or sorry, Steven Spielberg had just gotten divorced, and George Lucas was going through a divorce with his wife, Marcia, at the time, hence why Willie was subjugated to the abuse that she is, because both directors were like, women, you know, kind of attitude.
Yeah, she was very annoying.
Yeah, but that's why she was subjected to the torture that she's subjected to, because George Lucas was in a pretty messy divorce.
Yeah.
Taking it out on the poor actress who would one day become Mrs. Steven Spielberg and is still, I believe, today married to Steven.
Well,
moving on.
I did not know that fact.
All right, so also, this Last Starfighter, we're going to get the references out of the way because otherwise we'll get bogged down with them forever. The Last Starfighter was one of my favorite movies as a kid. I mean, the special effects in that thing for the 80s I thought were amazing. And there's now talks about making a sequel years later. Which would be hilarious if the fact that the old man from RoboCop, the leader of the warlock druids sacrificing children to their god in Halloween 3, is the alien from The Last Starfighter, Grig.
Well, are they making a sequel or just a reboot?
I don't even know. It's like, okay, Lance, Nick, whatever his name is, the guy who plays our main character in The Last Starfighter, would be not The Last Starfighter. He would be like his kid with Catherine's Mary Stewart, right? Is that who plays the
girlfriend?
I
suppose so.
Is it Catherine?
I think
Mary
it would work better as a reboot because kids today don't know that story.
Right. And then, of course, the Bad News Bears stars Walter Matthau, was remade in the 2000s, starring Billy Bob Thornton. I thought the remake kind of held up pretty well. It's a bunch of it's a bunch of rough and tough baseball team run by a guy who's a drunk.
Yeah, it's one of those feel-good movies. After you watch it, you're like, oh, yes, teamwork, and, you know, this ragtag band of kids come together. It's one of those feel-good movies. I don't really have
One of the actresses in this episode, Michelle Mackey, she was in Tammy and the T-Rex. Have you ever heard of this god-awful movie?
No.
It stars Denise Richards. It's, like, I think the debut movie of Denise Richards. She was also in The Dictator and on an episode of Friends. But Tammy and the T-Rex has become one of these cult favorite, horrible movies. It's about a girl who adopts a Tyrannosaurus Rex as a pet.
Okay.
An evil scientist implants the brain of Michael, a murdered high school student, into a Tyrannosaurus Rex. He escapes Rex's havoc and vengeance on his high school tormentors and is reunited with his lost love, Tammy.
Okay, and someone green-lighted this idea.
Uh-huh. Tammy, was played by Denise Richards. Her husband,
wow.
Her high school sweetheart, was played by the late, great Paul Rocker.
Nah.
I believe it was the first movie starring the both of them. But anyway, so, oh my God. Being thrown into the shower violated with soap. Oh my God. The Challenger explosion being made fun of. Oh my God. Randall's ability to turn straight women into lesbians. Once upon a time was a ha-ha funny joke. Oh, the last man that you dated turned you in gay.
Yeah, and he interprets that as that, you know, he ruins women for all other men. On the commentary, Kevin Smith says that during the animating section, they tried to make the lesbians more hairy, you know, hair on their shoulders and on their chins, you know, a little bit more looking transish, I suppose. And the studio says, no, we need them a little bit more feminine, less dykey, quote unquote, less dykey. So there's only one character that has hair on her chin, and she is not a lesbian.
Again, when I watched this, I thought it was funny. And so the Leonardo decides to give Dante his own baseball team. He was going to pay him $100 million, but Dante had to shoot his mouth off, and he puts the money away. Also, he tells his bodyguard, what's his name from James Bond, odd job, his bodyguard tells him there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Well, I would say with this Clerks television show that, I don't know if there's bad publicity, but the only thing that kept the first episode going was Kevin Smith's appearance on Howard Stern. Stern was a huge supporter of this comic book show.
Wouldn't it have been funny, though, if a game like Mortal Kombat or Skyrim, you are the best at that game, and then you're kidnapped to this fantasy world and given a sword and shield and told to go fight the dragon, or you're now going to go fight, like, Sub-Zero or Scorpion in a battle to determine the fate of the universe?
Yeah, because somehow pressing buttons means that you're actually good at doing anything.
Correct.
You know,
however, yeah, see, that's the difference between the Pharaoh game and the Last Starfighter, at least in the Last Starfighter video game that he plays, Starfighter, or whatever it was called. He actually is in a cockpit kind of – he's in a test simulator like pilots get into before they go into combat.
Yes.
So you do that to get used to it. So when he is actually in the pilot seat, yes, he is scared out of his mind, but he is used to all the controls because it's just like the, you know, the Centauri, the guy who made the game, the Excalibur sword as he calls it, he designed it so it could be like a test to determine who could, you know – but it wasn't supposed to land in, you know, the middle of nowhere like it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in this episode, Randall is playing this game called Pharaoh, where it's just about pushing rocks in order to form a pyramid and avoiding the slave drivers with the whips.
Right.
He gets taken away in the same type of manner.
He also apparently is very asexual as he bats back and forth between being asexual and not asexual. Because he's, like, totally going to hook up with that chick until he sees the game, but then the Asian geishas show up saying that they'll have sex with him, but he'd rather masturbate to a busty Asian magazine.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't think that Randall enjoys people.
Probably. That is 100% true. In the Jay and Silent Bob reboot movie, Randall, Jeffrey is not in it because of the feud between him and Kevin Smith, which has been patched up, and they're going ahead with Clerks 3. But the only line we ever hear about Randall is when the cops show up to arrest Jay and Silent Bob. They handcuff Dante, and he says, if you want to know where Randall Graves is, I'll tell you. Just, you know, let me go. And that's all we ever hear about Randall. Jay is 26 years old. I guess that's fitting. Real-life Jason Mewes is pushing 50 soon.
Wow. Time flies.
I mean, Kevin's going to be 50 next year.
I know. It's just it shocks me.
The scores on the
next
baseball
thing you turn around, it's like, wow, it's 2020.
The scores of the baseball team are ridiculous. I don't know of a lot of different baseball scores that have ever had that high. I know you're not a sports fan, but let's see. What is the highest scoring game in baseball? And yes, I know it's Little League, but whatever. The highest scoring game in baseball was in 1922, Philadelphia Phillies versus the Chicago Cubs, 26-23.
Yeah, not 123 like they have in one game.
Yeah. They're playing some pretty horrible teams. But yeah, it was a long time ago we've ever had it. Actually, 1970, 1996. Ooh, see what's the 19? Looks like 2008. The Rockies versus the Marlins, 18-17, was the most recent highest scoring game.
Wow.
Yeah. The Red Sox had a 14 beat the Philadelphia Phillies 22-14. Your baseball team, my baseball team, beat your baseball team. Again, I know you're not a sports fan, but I love
that. Yeah, I don't really do sports.
Yeah. Okay, what do we have about the Thuggy cult?
Okay. Well, the Thuggies are, or I should say were, a cult of India. And so the word Thuggies is a Sanskrit word meaning concealment. And that's basically an organized gang of professional assassins. It was passed down through bloodline. So if your father was a Thuggy, then more than likely you're going to be a Thuggy. Sometimes travelers' children were often groomed into the Thuggy lifestyle, and they were ruled by a large collection of superstitions and beliefs that ended up with the Thuggies being almost a cult status. And yes, they do worship Kali.
Kali Ma, Kali Ma.
Exactly, exactly.
Never better parodied than in an episode of Family Guy where it's who's the name of the douchebag that was running Disney during the 80s and 90s that made a lot of money for Disney with hits like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Aladdin, Little Mermaid, and helped start Pixar or acquire Pixar, but unfortunately was recently found out to be like a giant sexist at work.
Oh, the name is slipping my mind.
That guy was parodied in an episode of Family Guy where Peter and Stewie were short round in Indy and they had to run through Disney while Disney executives chased him, like in the Temple of Doom.
Wow.
Yes. And the Kali Ma Kali worshiper was played by this Disney executive, which again, people look back at now and like, oh, hey, look, Family Guy was right on that before the truth was revealed about Disney.
So the favorite death method for the Thuggies was actually strangulation, either with a noose or with a handkerchief. Since it was a quick, quiet method, and they did not use any special equipment, it was just them, and they would rob them and then bury the body carefully away to cover up the crime.
Sounds like a good time.
So according to the Guinness Book of World Records, the Thuggies were responsible for approximately 2 million deaths. But there's really no way to confirm all of these when the practice began, because the Thuggies are actually dated back to about 1356 and had been in operation until, it was only until 1830s. Where they implemented the Thuggy and Diocese Suppression Acts, which stated, it is hereby enacted that whoever shall be proved to have belonged either before or after the passing of this act to any gang of thugs, whether within or without the territories of the East India Company, shall be punished with imprisonment for life with hard labor.
Wow.
After that, they pretty much, disbanded.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun group of people. So the Asian geishas turned into lesbians and say, continue with your male worthlessness, Randall, in lesbian liberation. Jesus Christ. Okay, again, one joke is as bad as the other. It's still very, all very funny. As the late, great George Carlin, a character in Kevin Smith's films, at least three of them, has said, everything is funny in context.
Yeah, true.
So, gay jokes, I think, are funny in regards to the overall message. Let me rephrase that. I think gay jokes, like many jokes, can be funny as long as they're not specifically being targeted at one individual or being mean to somebody. I think in a cartoon, you can get away with it a lot more than you can, let's say, in a live-action show like Friends.
You can. Although, to me, I think the good mark of if it's an acceptable joke is, does it humiliate the gay person? If it humiliates them, then it's not really a good joke to tell. If it's just, pointing out the obviousness of the situation, they're gay or they're not gay, then that's, that can be funny.
Yeah, I don't think, like, pointing out somebody being gay because you're going to be mean or trying to out them is okay, but I think Will and Grace tiptoes us line with that, and I've never watched that show, and I don't want to watch that show, and it has nothing to do with anything in particular. It's just, the show just never appealed to me. But I watched The L Word.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Jennifer Grey. She was on that. Which, by the way, The L Word is apparently coming back.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Also, that's how I learned who Alan Cummings was, because he came from The L Word. So why are they playing, when they liberate the slaves, the name of their team, by the way, is the ex-slaves versus the escort service. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because the team is called escort service because it was too long to put, the fire and air conditioning and escort service, something like that. I didn't write that one down. But yeah, it was just a long name. And so they just put escort service because it costs by the letter.
Okay. I just don't understand why they're playing the team that they just liberated. Wouldn't you play the team of the opposite league? Are they the opposite league? I mean, they've been in slavery this whole time. They haven't had a chance to fight their way through a championship to get there.
Yeah, but this is cartoon logic, so
I want realism
not
in my cartoon
logic.
Playing
a game still puts them at the top for somehow.
All right. The ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, and Anakin Skywalker show up with Charles Barkley, and they basically shun him for being black.
Yeah. They wouldn't give him a high five.
No.
And they also do, again, the Batman wall-climbing joke with the pot smash.
Right,
as it did in previous episodes.
The whole reason Dante wanted to run the baseball team is because he wasn't getting the recognition he deserved and was cut out of the photo, and it happens again.
Yeah, at the very end you see the picture of the winning Little League team, and Dante's head is completely cut off.
And he just looks miserable as hell at the quick stop.
Yeah. In the commentary, there was some additional content cut out for Randall's escaping, because in this episode, Dante really comes to the rescue of Randall kind of unbeknownst to him because he was going to look for the Little League team and just like happens to have Randall there. But in the commentary, Kevin Smith says that there was supposed to be a Donkey Kong reference while Randall was trying to escape with the mine carts and pushing barrels and all of that, but it had to be cut for time. Kevin Smith also said that there was a lot that he learned about copyright law with this particular episode.
I don't know what copyright law he would have to deal with considering they never aired it.
Well, they still had to get around certain copyright law. During the reunion, you're taking a look at the yearbook picture, and there is a picture of Randall in that famous picture taken in Vietnam with the gun pointed at the victim. He had his head blown off, and that was a very famous picture.
Oh.
Now, it's not enough to just put Randall as the shooter in that picture. They actually had to put the caption underneath best hall monitor in order for it to cross over into the actual parody phase and so that they could go around that copyright on that picture.
Gotcha. One of the other actors who voiced the guy who voiced the thuggy cult impersonator in this episode was Michael McKean from Spinal Tap and Clue.
Nice.
Best known also for current people watching or listening, playing Chuck McGill on Better Call Saul.
Very cool.
My favorite role of his will always be playing Mr. Green in Mr. Green in the Clue movie.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Clue, yes.
I'm a plant. I thought men like you were called a fruit.
I'm going home and sleeping with my wife. Yeah.
I'm not going to wait for Wadsworth to unmask me. I am a homosexual, and I have to keep it secret on security clearance. Thank you. And then he turns and looks at Mr. Professor Plum, and he just, like, bolts him out of his chair. He also played a great role on The X-Files. He was Morris Fletcher. Do you remember that?
Hmm.
Morris Fletcher was the in the episode where Mulder switches bodies with a man in black.
Oh, I don't remember that one. Maybe I didn't see that episode.
It was in season 6 after the movie. So it was, it was good.
It's probably about the time that, you know, just before that I had tuned out. So
season 6, I think, is still a big highlight. Season 7, where it starts to go off the rails a little bit, but they do have some highlights in that season, like X-Cops, which was an X-Files Cops parody, as well as the episode where somebody asks to turn one of their declassified cases into a movie, and Taya Leone and somebody else plays Mulder and Scully, who Taya Leone, of course, was married to Jimmy Lee and David Duchovny at the time.
Yeah, so that's on the commentary track, Kevin Smith says that this episode should have probably aired first, because what we have is, this is a cohesive story that he says is more about what the show would eventually become versus the ones that they had actually previously made, which are a little bit more disjointed and, you know, a lot of callbacks to things that they never did, and it's more confusing to the audience. And this one, because of the two storylines that end up merging at the end, and it ends up being a little bit more supportive for both characters, this would have actually pleased audiences more.
Well, we have one episode left for the podcast. I'm still hoping we'll have a surprise guest on the show, but I haven't had a lot of luck reaching said person. If they don't come on, then I'll reveal the circumstances around trying to get them on the show. But I will continue trying. Mr. Zeneca could also try reaching out as well through social media, so maybe he'll get more than one message to be like, oh, yeah, I said I would do that. I also lost their business card, but the business card, all it had on it was the public knowledge social media stuff, so I didn't have any super private contact information. But I'm going to continue looking to find that business card just in case there was something on there I missed, but I'm pretty sure there wasn't. So, but we have one episode left, and then we're going to be taking a quick break between that episode, which will be the 19th, because we're going to skip Christmas, and we're going to come back with the first episode of the year for Witchblade, who we might have a guest on for that, but they're not returning my messages either. So.
Yeah, it's a busy time. It's the holidays.
Right. I'm also emailing. I'm going to try reaching them after this holiday is now over. But, we're going to start Witchblade right in the beginning of the year. It'll be an extra long episode because it is the pilot, and hopefully we'll have somebody on from Top Cow to talk about Witchblade with us, too, which will be great for the pilot episode. So, if that does happen, we'll probably focus more on the interview itself than the overall notes of the episode, because of the pilot movie for Witchblade was really close to the comic book very well. So having somebody on who wrote Witchblade to talk about the episode and the origin of Witchblade and their work on Witchblade would be a lot better than us just going through the plot of the movie. So, but I digress. We'll get there when we get there. We're about a month away from that happening. But, yeah, we are going to get to Witchblade after Clerks in between a holiday break. So thank you for everyone for tuning in to this episode of the Dead TV tuning in to this episode of the Dead TV Podcast covering animated series of Clerks by Kevin Smith. If Jay and Silent Bob Reboot Roadshow is in your area, go see it. The movie's a lot of fun. I can't wait to pick it up on DVD and Blu-ray. I really enjoyed that movie, and that movie has a lot of heart to it. I can't praise it enough. Kevin Smith did an amazing job with that movie. He hit all the right buttons. Yeah, there's stuff in there that's not all great, but there is mostly good stuff in there, and it has a great message in the middle that hits you pretty hard to home. Can't wait for his next endeavor. Also, it's apparently tracking to become one of the best, highest grossing return investment movies of all time. Like, the money that they're making on it is, like, more than made up for what they put into it.
Excellent.
So, but go see it if it's in your area. Go see it if it's in your area. Either go see it live with Kevin there, or go see it the simultaneous broadcast. So, because he's on the show, he's on the road with that for another few months into 2020. So, you can check us out on the Dead TV Podcast on Facebook at Chris DSAV and Elgalina Kinky, and you can send us an email at thatradiohart@gmail.com. I got nothing coming up in December. Do you?
I have two events in December. The Cherry Noir, which is on Thursday, December 12th, I'm doing the Hogwarts Holiday Party, so that I've got some costumed actors that are doing the House Cup Challenge. I have a souvenir ornaments for everyone that attends, and it's just going to be a overboard with Harry Potter themed stuff. And then the following day, which is Friday the 13th of December,
right,
I am doing the Horror Holiday Party. So hopefully I'll have special guest Jason Voorhees to attend.
Cool. Very cool.
Yes.
Well, thank you, everybody. Come back in 2 weeks.
Bye.